Well, how great it is to have as our guest on the Lou Rockwell Show this morning, Mr. Roger Stone. What do we say about Roger? The most interesting man in American politics, a guy who's been at the center of presidential politics on the Republican side and many, many other important political races since Richard Nixon's day. The guy who's very influential with Donald Trump. I want to mention, first of all, the author of three recent bestsellers, three great books that I highly encourage everybody to read. The first is called The Man Who Killed Kennedy, The Case Against LBJ. The second is about Jeb and the Bush crime family. And by the way, they really are a criminal family. I compare them to the mafia, but I don't want to insult the mafia. And then the most recent one, The Clintons' War on Women. This is the book that has brought together all the evidence about Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, the various very nasty escapades over the years, and the fact that the murder of Vince Foster and similar other crimes are being brought back. They were never discussed. They were always covered up by the evil Ken Starr, who just got fired for covering up rapes by football players at Baylor University. Very nasty piece of work, Ken Starr. But so this is the man who wrote the book. This is the man that, knows where all the bodies are buried, knows who committed the crimes, who got away with them, who covered them up. So Roger, talk to us about what's happening. What's happening with the Trump campaign? Is the Republican establishment really coming around? Or are they still playing all kinds of mischief? What's happening with the criminal Hillary, what do we call her, Batwoman, and the and Robin, of course, in Bill's case, that'd be R-O-B-B-I-N apostrophe.
Well, Lou, it's an exciting time to be involved in American politics. I think we're seeing a revolution. As you know, the mainstream media has always been able to control the narrative. And in the 1980s, the Clintons were very, very adept at using a combination of strong-arm tactics and pressure on the three major networks, on the two cable networks, and of course on the individual witnesses to their many, many crimes. And therefore, much about the Clintons was suppressed. We live in a different time today, thanks to outlets like LouRockwell.com and Breitbart and the Drudge Report and Infowars.com and the Daily Caller and Town Hall and so many others. Information can no longer be suppressed. Just because something isn't on CBS doesn't mean it didn't happen. And therefore, you have now the worst possible situation for the Clintons. A major party nominee who will command media presence whenever he feels like it because he is the nominee and who is entirely unafraid to raise these scandals and point the finger where it has always belonged. I kind of think that the Clintons, because these issues never came up 8 years ago when she faced off against Barack Obama, may have thought that they were safe or that the statute of limitations had run or that nobody would dare bring these things up for fear of being ostracized. They call you a conspiracy theorist. They don't mean that as a compliment, by the way. Whenever you challenge the narrative of the government, you and I both know the government virtually never tells you the truth. Now, I've had a long odyssey from being a conventional Goldwater Republican who put my faith in the federal government to be a libertarian bomb thrower who sees the corruption of both parties and sees the danger of the two-party duopoly, which has given us one set of policies: endless war, erosion of our civil liberties, erosion of the value of our money, massive debt and spending, bailouts for the scoundrels and thieves on Wall Street while working people can't find jobs, an incoherent foreign policy while we let the strength of our military atrophy, so it's no longer there as a deterrent, the idea of peace through strength out the window. This is the legacy of the Bushes and the Clintons. This is the legacy of the Republicans and the Democrats. And now Donald Trump comes along, an outsider, a reformer, a guy who has enormous courage. And although he is the nominee of the Republican Party, or will be, he's not beholden to the Republican Party leadership or their failed policies of the past, which is why you see the mainstream media and the Democrats going out of their minds.
It was funny to see on Morning Joe the other day when they were all just in anguish and outrage and just disbelief that Donald Trump would dare to raise questions about, say, Vince Foster, how terrible it was that he was responsible for Trump raising the point about, although I don't know that he was responsible, for raising the point about Ted Cruz's father, very suspicious connections to Lee Harvey Oswald, maybe much more than that. I noticed, by the way, Cruz never denied his dad's connection to Lee Harvey Oswald. He just had an indignant non-denial. What? How dare you say such a thing about my father?
Yeah, and of course, the photo produced in the National Enquirer, of course, came from the Warren Commission. Didn't come from the National Enquirer. Judith Very Baker, who's a friend of mine, who is indisputably in a relationship with Lee Harvey Oswald from 1961 to 63, says she knew Rafael Cruz well. They called him Rafi, and he was part of Lee's crew in New Orleans. Now, I don't want to dwell on this, but the Warren Commission told us that Oswald was a communist. Well, then why was he handing out anti-communist literature in New Orleans? And why, when he was arrested and taken to the New Orleans police station, he was allowed one call? Who did he call? His wife? His lawyer? No, he called the station chief of the FBI in New Orleans, and 22 minutes later, he was released without charges. So that narrative was kind of a cul-de-sac. I think it was designed to get under Ted Cruz's skin on the morning of a crucial primary, and it most definitely did that.
Yeah, sure did. So that was quite wonderful, and they were, it's just, the media is supposed to believe that it's unbelievably outrageous to bring up these, what they call unproven charges from 20 years ago or whatever the number of years, although you can bring up what happened to Donald Trump in high school. So they're just outraged that they're being circumvented, but they are being circumvented. And it's quite a wonderful thing to see. It seems like Hillary is unstable on her feet. Seems like she doesn't quite know how to handle this. And of course, her vast apparatus of advisors and researchers and briefing book authors and all the rest of it. Trump just seems to be, as Camille Paglia pointed out the other day, like Errol Flynn hopping around the rat lines of the ship, moving around with his sword in hand. And meanwhile, Hillary's like the old Spanish admiral in his cabin of a low riding Spanish bullion ship that's about to be taken. So it's quite an amazing thing to see. But can we trust Reince Priebus? Can we trust the rest of these people to be doing what they say they're going to do? Does Cruz and these other guys, do they still plan trouble at the convention, or are things pretty much wrapped up?
Well, first of all, I think you have to look at this race in a non-conventional way. Our past presidential campaigns have been Republicans versus Democrats. And yes, therefore, there was a premium on so-called party unity. We're not going to have party unity. There are those like the Bushes and the Romneys who will not support Donald Trump. But within this arrangement, when this new kind of paradigm, I think that's a plus. Because for every Republican that Trump loses, and I think that'll be less than 10%, there are millions, literally, of new voters or voters who stop voting who will come back to the process, or millennials who are just coming to the process who will vote for Trump. Trump has gotten the largest number of votes of any Republican nominee in the primaries in American history, almost 3 million votes more than Ronald Reagan. That demonstrates to me that the energy and the enthusiasm is with Trump. In all honesty, I think the endorsement of the Bush crime family is a negative. It's ironic. Jeb Bush says that he won't endorse Trump because he doubts that he has the character to be president. Here's a guy who was a drug dealer, who defrauded an SNL in South Florida out of $4 million, who profiteered on the governorship, getting paid millions of dollars for governmental decisions he made. For example, the shift of state pension funds to Lehman Brothers, where Lehman Brothers then loaded up with $1.5 billion worth of toxic mortgage-based securities, mortgage-backed securities, which of course failed, costing the taxpayers of Florida over $1 billion. A week after Jeb leaves the governorship, he gets a nice fat check for $1.5 million for becoming a consultant to Lehman Brothers. Who doesn't have the character to be president? So I think it's an absurdity. I don't expect problems at the Republican National Convention inside the hall. Sure, you've got some bitter enders who are for Ted Cruz, and they're grumbling a lot. And you know, there may be some low-scale machinations, but every indication I have is that the Trump forces are now in solid control of the Rules Committee, the Credentials Committee, and the Platform Committee. I think that the platform is going to be a very, very, very conservative document in line with previous Republican platforms. There's a few things I'd like to see in there that I don't know if we'll make it. I'd like to see gold in there, if you want to know the truth. But, you know, I'm on the fringes, I guess. But it's going to be a very conservative document. The greater trouble, Lou, will be outside the hall, where George Soros will fund the Black Lives Matter and the MoveOn.org professional agitators who come there to foment violence. I think that this is a very tricky thing because, as we have seen in the primaries, violence at the Trump rallies has actually redounded to Trump's benefit. Voters see that and they see exactly what he's standing up against. It's actually helped galvanize votes for Trump. Now, I'm not advocating violence, and I urge any Trump supporter to eschew violence, eschew confrontation, because these people are professionals. This is agitprop. They're coming there to cause bloodshed. Don't engage them. Don't give them the opportunity, because the mainstream media will immediately turn around, as you know, and blame Trump for the violence.
That's right.
Instead of blaming the agitators.
In fact, they're trying to blame him for the all the horrible violence, mob violence outside his New Mexico event.
Yeah, looking at those news clips this morning, in all honesty, in middle America, I think that that won Trump votes. Look, he's not going to stop speaking out on immigration, on our economy, on our ridiculous trade situation, on the value of our money. He's going to talk about all these things. He is not, like any other politician I've worked for, he's not scripted. He's not programmed. He's not coached. What you see is what you get. It's the real, unadulterated Donald Trump. Nobody puts words in his mouth. I've worked on and off for him for almost 40 years. I have enormous affection and respect for him, particularly for the fact that he knows he's taking his life in his hands every time he ventures out on a campaign trip. Yes, he has very good personal security. He has the additional security of the U.S. Secret Service. That sometimes makes me a little nervous. But I do think that, you know, that he's a man of enormous courage. And he is going to lead a revolution, and he's not going to be deterred. And now, as you point out, he has hit on the greatest single vulnerability of the Clintons. And that is the fact that although the mainstream media would like it to be about marital infidelity or adultery or girlfriends or mistresses, because then they could say, well, Bill had affairs, but Donald also had at least one affair that we know of, and therefore it's a wash. This is within the context of their marriages. This is a private matter. It's not the issue here at all. This has nothing to do with infidelity or adultery. Bill Clinton is a Bill Cosby-type sexual predator. And we have a long trail of entirely credible women like Juanita Broderick, like the very brave and courageous Kathleen Willey, like Paula Jones, like Christy Zurcher, like Sandra Allen James, Liz Ward Grayson, who changed her story only after she got a Hollywood bit part job from a agent friend of Bill's. These women have all spoken out, but they will speak out more. They couldn't get a mainstream media outlet other than NBC to cover them when they made their original charges. We had essentially a Clinton-fostered news blackout. So now what will happen is, right out of the Clinton playbook, we're going to try to discredit those women. They're all being paid to lie. Yesterday, both NBC and Fox aired a clip of me with Alex Jones, in which I said that some friends of Kathleen Willey had set up a GoFundMe account to try to save her home from foreclosure. And I was told by someone on the Trump staff that he had sent an online contribution. Turns out that that is not true. It's also moot. We were able to raise enough money, I think, to save Kathleen's home in very small donations. Trump is not a donor. But more importantly, Kathleen Willey wrote her book and made her charges against Bill Clinton years before Donald Trump thought about running for president, years before I ever met her. So it is typical of the attempts to discredit this woman. You know the names they've been called: sluts, whores, bimbos, trash. Monica Lewinsky, they call, and that was consensual. They called her a slut, a nut, a Looney Tune, a stalker. It's the women's fault when they get assaulted by Bill. And the Democrats try to say, okay, but Bill's not running, and it's not about Bill. The truth is, Hillary is an accessory after the fact in every one of these sex crimes, because Hillary is the one who has led the campaign to disparage, discredit, bully, threaten, and terrorize these women out of coming forward, in some cases, out of answering a subpoena.
Well, it's very exciting. It's driving the whole establishment crazy to raise these things. And of course, as some brave reporter asked a question of Hillary, or maybe it was not a reporter, maybe it was a person in the audience, she always said, you must always believe the women. When there's a rape charge, you must always believe the women. But of course, it turns out, no, not always, not in these cases.
Yeah, actually, ironically, the person who asked that question was a voter. It was in New Hampshire. And she said, well, you say that the women deserve to be believed. She actually had Hillary had a television commercial focused on younger women, where she has a real problem, because my granddaughter's in college now. Sexual assault and rape is a very, very hot issue on the campuses today. It's finally being discussed, and there's a spotlight on it. So Hillary had a video that said that these women who made these claims deserve to be believed. And a voter asked her, well, if they deserve to be believed, what about Broderick, Willie, Jones? Do they deserve to be believed? And Hillary said, well, they deserve to be believed until there is evidence that they should not be believed. Now, if I were a New York Times reporter, my follow-up question would be, what evidence? What evidence do you refer to? I wrote an entire book on this subject. There is no evidence whatsoever that any of these women have been paid or have otherwise been prompted to bear false witness against the Clintons. This is really simple to solve. Let Juanita Broderick speak. Let Hillary speak. Let the people decide. Let Kathleen Willey speak. Let Hillary speak. Let the people decide.
And weren't some of these women paid huge settlements by Bill Clinton? Of course, they always tell us, of course, not admitting guilt. But if you're paying somebody $850,000 over an alleged incident, it's not an admission of guilt, maybe, from a legal standpoint, but it seems to tell you something.
Well, it tells you that they didn't want to go to trial where the charges would have been proved. Paula Jones Bill Clinton exposed himself to her and demanded oral sex in an Arkansas hotel room. She has never wavered in her claims. She was paid $850,000 to settle her claims. That tells me the Clintons didn't want to go to trial. So when they say there is no proof, I say, well, the women deserve to be believed. Let them speak out. I find them compelling, to say the least.
Well, I thought that little Instagram ad from Trump with just the short comment by Juanita Broderick was extremely moving and extremely effective. And again, the media was, of course, all over it, denouncing it, saying this is unproven, how dare they do it, all the usual stuff. But of course, who besides you and me watch shows like Morning Joe who might be potential Trump supporters? I mean, it seems to me there's nobody.
Yeah, I think that's the real problem. The Clintons and their allies, particularly David Brock and the folks at Media Matters for America, are intent on suppressing free expression, because this strategy worked for them in the 80s. They were able to pressure most media outlets out of carrying these stories. Now, I think it's ironic that the National Enquirer was among those who did print the various charges. And now the Clintons say, oh, that's that National Enquirer stuff. Well, that's kind of elitist. 6 million people read the National Enquirer, and the National Enquirer is often right. They got the John Edwards scandal right when the Washington Post got it wrong. They got the O.J. Simpson scandal right. They have gotten many scandals right. I'm sorry, the folks at the Washington Post have less integrity than the people at the National Enquirer.
That's for sure. So here we have, give me your prognostication. Of course, we're all concerned, as Trump is concerned, about the vast immigration into this country, illegal, legal, with obviously a political purpose. This has been going on since the 65, since LBJ, Teddy Kennedy's, Hubert Humphrey, et cetera, 65 Immigration Act that barred immigration from Europe and opened up the borders otherwise with the intent of changing the American population. So, of course, it's somewhat worked. Maybe it's has it worked? I mean, can and then, of course, we learned today that Obama is really stepping up the resettlement of Syrian refugees, approving them all. Come on in, go on hyper welfare, and get affirmative action and become privileged, governmentally privileged people in this country. So they're bringing them all in. Certainly, if Hillary wins, I would say that's the end from the standpoint of immigration. There's going to be, in many other senses too, but she's going to bring in that, you know, they're going to have the Soros and the rest of them are going to have their victory. Have they done enough so far to defeat Trump? Are there enough potential in the general election if they can get, if Hillary can get all their troops out, whether they're paying them or otherwise, busing them all to the polls? Can they win? Can they win the necessary electoral votes, even if they can't win the popular vote?
Well, of course, it remains to be seen. I do think we're at a tipping point. One only has to look at these horrific videos in Germany and France to see the wave that is headed this way. And the fact that Obama is stepping up the program tells me that they see the end coming, and they are beginning to feel the heat from Donald Trump. Based on some very good analytical analysis that I have seen by a fellow named Bill Wilson, who is really an analytical genius, there's a couple million votes out there that are unregistered today that are Trump votes. You can profile these people in the 10 big states. If the Trump campaign does not target these people for voter registration, then I'm convinced that some worthy super PAC will do so. And if that's the way it has to happen, so be it. I think there's a couple million votes out there for Trump that are gettable that could tip this scale. This has to be done strategically, and it has to be done in those states that are really in play. What's interesting, of course, in the case of Trump is there are states in play now that were not in play for Mitt Romney, were not in play for John McCain, states like Michigan, states like Pennsylvania, states like New Jersey, states like New York, where you would still have to give the edge to Hillary, but Trump is within striking distance. I really think a lot of this has to do with the complete failure of NAFTA. Ross Perot was right. That giant sucking sound was the jobs leaving America. TPP, TPA, that's the next iteration of these disastrous globalist trade deals. This is the essence of Trump's candidacy. So in all honesty, a third of Bernie Sanders voters, I think, are available to Trump. Not as hard left voters, but those blue collar Democrats who realize that they have been left out of the New World Order economy and that there are no jobs for them and that these massive trade deals will make things worse, not better. Now, Hillary tells us today, yeah, NAFTA was a mistake and I regret it. Three strikes were out, which has landed so many young African-American men in prison. Yeah, that was a mistake. I regret it. All the central tenets of Clintonism, they were all mistakes. Now she's changed her mind. It doesn't work that way. The Clintons are responsible for the decline of America. They're responsible for the policies that we have today because their policies were merely handed down to George W. Bush, who handed them down to Barack Obama, who seeks to hand them down to Hillary. It's a watershed year. I don't think that they have let enough people into the country to lock this election, but we're very, very close to it. This is the tipping point. We either save our democracy, save our republic now, or it doesn't get saved.
Roger, I remember back during the NAFTA fight, and I was opposed to NAFTA, which of course was not free trade, but managed crony trade. And I was able to, I spent the whole day at the government printing office in Washington going through the NAFTA treaty. At that point, that was the only way you could get it. It was, you know, a number of gigantic books. And it was interesting because, this won't surprise you, it was nothing but, for example, all the benefits to, say, Caterpillar, General Electric, all the big companies that were associated with the Republicans and the Democrats, benefiting them, blocking others. So this is not, it's not any more than TPP. It has nothing to do with the freedom of trade. It has to do with crony trade and helping all the big boys. And of course, there were many, many victims of these trade treaties. And I saw a very poignant on MSNBC on the Chris Matthews show, an interesting, poignant thing where, and he was out, he was horrified by it. There was this retired working class guy in Pennsylvania, had been a steel guy. And he talked about how he'd been a lifelong Democrat, but he was going to support Trump because he liked what he had to say. And he knew what NAFTA and similar things had done. And of course, it had turned his town into a wasteland. So it's absolutely, there are people who, there are different, there are wonderful undercurrents happening. Can it work? We know we can't really trust these people even as to the election integrity or anything else. So it's all, I guess, neck and neck. But we all owe you a debt of gratitude for helping make this happen, for bringing these issues to the fore, whether it's immigration, political correctness, very, very important. Trump, just his statement that nobody would be paying any attention to Hillary if she weren't a woman. Or I think of Susana Martinez, that horrible governor of New Mexico, who is a never-Trumpist. And she was too busy, she said, to go to the event. But this is somebody nobody ever would have heard of if she weren't a woman and if she weren't a Mexican. I mean, that's the only reason anybody cares about her. That's the way the Republicans have promoted her. She's been a terrible governor. She's no good. So I remember early on they were pushing Susana Martinez as his vice presidential candidate.
Yeah, so I think you can scratch her off the list.
No, that was great.
You know, look, we wouldn't even be talking about the issue of illegal immigration if it wasn't for Donald Trump. The fact that he highlighted this in his announcement speech threw an immediate focus on sanctuary cities, and the Congress was forced to deal with it. So he has brought this issue to the forefront, and he's brought it to the boiling point. Because the mainstream media is not going to tell you that about the hordes of young Muslim men in Europe who are raping and pillaging and killing and maiming and destroying public property. They're not going to tell you that story. So the credit belongs to Donald Trump. He has outlined a series of issues in very simple terms that people can understand. And he's prepared to take America back. He's prepared to make the country great again. Is he a perfect conservative? Not at all. Is he a pure conservative? Not at all. But he is head and shoulders better than the other choices. I argue he's the best choice for conservatives in 2016, because on the four or five big issues, our fiscal situation, our trade policy, our immigration policy, and our ridiculous foreign policy, he's rock solid. And then he has a healthy skepticism about the war on drugs. I like that, too. And he's got his own views on money. So this is a guy who understands the economy, understands job creation. His economic plan, his tax reform plan, cutting our corporate tax rate below that of China, below that of Mexico. That's the answer, not tariffs, but cut the corporate rate. China, I think we're at 35. China's at 25. If we cut our corporate rate, as Trump proposes, to 20, you'll see a job boom in this country. You'll see all those companies who are doing business abroad because it's cheaper and more profitable come home where they'd rather do business to begin with. So they'd expand here. They'd hire here. They'd create jobs here. Trump, the businessman, understands this.
Well, I disagree with Mr. Trump on, of course, a lot of things myself. It occurred to me from the very beginning, first of all, he's discussing these issues like immigration and political correctness that nobody else is, that were off the table. But also, we knew from the very beginning that the 16 midgets he ran against for the Republican nomination, Hillary, Bernie, O'Malley, the forgotten O'Malley, all of these people that he ran against were absolutely guaranteed to never do anything good. There would be nothing good that would come out of their being president. Trump, I think that, you know, I thought from the very beginning, he may do some great things. He certainly seems less warlike than Hillary, who could really bring about World War III, continuing the Obama aggression against Russia and China. And again, the political correctness, the immigration issue, which may be the most important issue. So he's raised all these great things. Maybe he will do some great things. But again, his opponents, Hillary, whoever it is, it's not going to be Bernie, obviously, but would be include Bernie too. They're absolutely guaranteed to be total disasters, maybe world historic disasters, maybe even bring, I mean, is Hillary capable of bringing an end to human life on Earth? She's a very bad lady. She's a crazy lady. She's a neocon. She's got the worst people in America as her advisors and her financiers. So how can there be even a choice?
Yeah, this is a very simple choice. Look, I think Donald Trump came along and he upset what was a very cozy relationship. Hillary was going to run against Jeb. The two families are in business together. They profiteer together. I urge anybody to look at their joint Haitian relief fund. Is a scam. They stole all the money. They rehabilitate each other. They compliment each other. This is why Barbara Bush says that Bubba is like the fourth Bush brother, or George W. Bush says that Bubba's like his brother-in-law. That makes Hillary his sister-in-law. This is enough to make you puke. So they had a cozy arrangement. They won't bring up their joint involvement in various crimes. Jeb would never bring up Bill's assaulting women. Hillary would never bring up the Bush's experience in drug trafficking during Iran-Contra and otherwise, and the American people would be put to sleep. Hillary would win, Jeb would go back to profiteering with the Clinton family, and the country would go down the drain. Along comes a nationalist, Donald Trump, an unabashed nationalist, someone who doesn't buy the globalist agenda, someone who's completely and totally uncontrollable. And at first they tried to laugh at him, and they ignored him. You have no idea how many people told me, he'll never run. Come on, this is all about publicity. It's all about branding. And then when he became a candidate, they said, he'll never file his financial disclosures. Not in a million years, zero chance. Of course, Trump was the one who filed on time. Jeb had to ask for an extension. Then they said, these debates will be a disaster. He's going to make a fool of himself. I think he won virtually every debate. The one that he didn't win was at worst a tie, a wash. Beyond that, I think he moved up after every debate, despite the fact that the debates were loaded against him, that he was the only candidate getting personal and hostile questions. He still stood tall. Then they said that, after Iowa, that was it. The air was out of the tire. He was going down. He went on to win bigger and bigger in each round. He's a force of nature. He's unstoppable. He's our last best chance to save the United States of America.
Well, Roger Stone, thanks for all you do. Thanks for the person you are. Thanks for coming on the show today. I want to urge everybody to look at stonezone.com. It's important to join Roger's Twitter account. Fascinating and great stuff. Look at his Facebook page. Roger, you're great, and it's an honor to have you on.
Well, Lou, as you know, I'm a giant fan of LouRockwell.com. It's pretty much the first thing I read in the morning. But usually Judge Napolitano's already sent me the best links by about 7:30 a.m. So he saves me a lot of trouble. I'm delighted to be here, and I'm honored to be your friend.
Thank you, Roger. Bye-bye. Well, thanks so much for listening to the Lou Rockwell Show today. Take a look at all the podcasts. There have been hundreds of them. There's a link on the LRC front page. Thank you.